yesterday of the person. You can give any of the different types of responses that we spoke about yesterday. And then we'll, and then reverse. And then the person who heard the story, he who has heard will now tell his own story. And then we'll, and then after that we'll have a few, we'll have a few minutes discussion on points on storytelling of what the tellers learned and what the responders learned about telling stories from that experience. Okay, so why don't we just divide up. And then I guess it'll, my guess will take 15, 20 minutes. 20 minutes, eh? Okay, why don't you do that right now? But just get the groups clearly defined into twos. There's one group. Exercise, or another part of the class, right? And everyone's been talking and telling stories and having a good time. Now we have to make a bridge between this segment of the class that we were just in and the segment we're just going to. And how have we chosen to do this? This is how. First of all, by making that announcement spontaneously. But aside from that, let's talk about what you learned about storytelling and simultaneously what techniques you saw demonstrated. We showed and talked about so many techniques yesterday. So what techniques did you see demonstrated? And second, what did you learn about storytelling? Yeah? Was that a raised hand? The flies, okay.
I learned that the real experience of the
Now that brings up a really interesting point, that what do you think is that thing that absorbs the listener? You are the listeners, you are the speakers. Sometimes when you're speaking, you feel that everyone's mind is out the window, and sometimes you feel everyone's mind is fully absorbed in your words. Now what is it that from your experience, not from theory, you found makes the difference in that?
Pundri? Enthusiasm of the speaker.
Enthusiasm? What else? Yeah.
The conflict, the uncertainty, the slow laughing.
Conflict. Everyone loves it.
Visualization.
The visualization that the person, as Mataji was saying, is really there in the experience. Yeah? What else? Dave? What did you?
The projecting of the voice. By delivering the story.
The voice.
The tension.
The tension or conflict. What else?
Kind of the same point you mentioned, but sanjiya is called being there. Actually realizing and relishing the stories to tell it.
Yeah. So some of you might have told ghost stories and you maybe were there. I don't know. There was at least one ghost story. And who else? Anyone else tell ghost stories? And Acharya Ratna told the ghost story. Anyone else? No one else. Yeah? Yadav?
Half.
Huh? Half a ghost. Okay, what else did you see? Or what did you learn and what techniques did you see? See, everyone was in their little groups before, right? So this is bringing us back as a class. Now, I can't let it go on for too long, even though it would be very interesting to let this conversation go on for a very long time. Yeah.
The story presented to me, there was a question that he asked the Prabhupada. And that question remained unasked. The answer was at the very end of the story.
Oh.
Different things were going on.
Who told that one? Expertise.
I was really nice. All the way to the end, that first expense was really nice. Would he ask it?
Did you ask it? Yeah.
What I noticed in a couple of stories I heard and what you told was these techniques you're speaking of, they've been developed by each person to some extent.
In their own way?
Just by being alive in the world and telling stories. So they're not so much taking studying, like some of those things you've taught, it actually takes studying to utilize these things and put them into your teaching. Well, storytelling, everybody knows how to tell a nice story. everybody has their own style and we'll figure that out, right? And you get to see that, you know,
even without having been to my lesson. Wait a second. Anyway, we'll cut it out next time. But I just need an opportunity to tell my story. I like that story.
It's actually a pretty good teacher.
He's expert. Yeah.
Yeah, I found also that the hand gesture is very...
Hand gesture. Who found themselves using hand gestures? Almost two-thirds of everyone. Did anyone get up and rant and rave and jump up and down? Anyone do any jumping up and down? Janardhan was jumping. Now, how many of you felt that the story that you heard, that you learned something from, a preaching point deep like that, how many of you felt that it actually moved you? Wow, that's really good. Very nice. Very successful. So, in one sense, the main point in the storytelling lesson was simply that storytelling is an essential part of instructing. Use it. It's very powerful. It's good for preaching. All kinds of instruction. Storytelling is good. Now, we'd like to move from storytelling, which ends, as we said yesterday, the chapter on instructing, to discussion. Now, discussion is defined here as a group conversation with a purpose. Of course, so many people get together and just talk and talk and talk Gramya Katha, and they're discussing the weather. But we're not talking about that type of a discussion. We're talking about a discussion with a purpose. When two or three or four or even more individuals get together to discuss something with a particular purpose. Now, discussion is one of the four different teaching techniques that we included. Not techniques exactly, but procedures. Procedure meaning a way or a procedure to teach towards the students learning a specific instructional objective. So this is one of the ways that we can use to achieve our instructional objective. Now, when can we use when can we use discussion? Any ideas about that? When would be discussion? When would discussion be a useful technique or procedure to use? Yeah, Metagor. A new issue. Now, when we use it as a new issue, we'd bring up an issue, and not everyone is thinking about this issue, probably no one is thinking about the issue, and then you start discussing it, and if it's done properly, everyone's mind becomes focused on the issue. Now, that 10 or 5-minute discussion may be before a lecture, and may discuss some of the key issues about a topic. It can be used after a lecture. Lecture is very good for transferring information, but it doesn't allow people during the time of the lecture generally to think deeply about a subject, because if you start thinking deeply about what you heard, then you'll miss the next sentence. So you mostly are just taking in information in a lecture. Just getting the information that the teacher knows and the realization that the teacher has and taking them in. Now, discussion can help us after a lecture by helping us confront some of the issues that the lecture has brought up. Such as, yesterday I gave quite a long lecture on techniques of storytelling. Well, you've noticed, or techniques in lecturing, or liveliness, that was 2 days ago, excuse me, and liveliness. Now, should these techniques be used in a Bhagavatam class? It was brought up roughly, and or generally, once or twice since we've brought up this class, but should these techniques be used by the speakers of the Bhagavatam class? Should all speakers of the Bhagavatam, should they first take this type of a course to get some idea how to speak so they can properly present information? Is it good to do that? Okay, there's already, we could start a discussion on it, but we'll wait a few minutes and maybe we'll start that discussion. But after that type of a class, the application of the principles that were talked about can be discussed. And we can hear different points of view because everyone has their own point of view. And one's own point of view matures by hearing the points of view of others, because we don't usually consider the points of view of others. So after hearing so many other points of view, our own point of view will become mature and broader and better thought out. So that's a second use of a discussion, or a third use, to clarify a philosophical issue, solve common problems. Now, often when we have a problem, either in a temple or individually, we just try to solve the problem ourselves. But discussion can be very useful for this. Discussions can reach very tangible conclusions if they are systematically led. In this lesson, or in the next two lessons, we've listed a simple format for coming to a conclusion of a practical decision through discussion. So discussions can also come to practical conclusions. Prabhupada even mentions that in one conversation in New Vrindavan, when Hayagriva said to Prabhupada, there was some conflict between Hayagriva and Kirtanananda. And Prabhupada was, and if one was going to be in charge, the other one wanted to leave. So Prabhupada said, why don't you form a committee and decide everything by committee? And after hearing so many times, Prabhupada previously having said that this is democracy, and democracy means demon crazy, and Hayagriva brought that up, we should have a monarchy, one person in charge. You have said that this democracy is no good. And Prabhupada said, this is the age of democracy. Very, very, very cute and sweet also. So to actually come to practical decisions, discussions are very useful. But if you don't know, if there's not a leader, a person who knows how to lead a discussion, trying to reach a decision in a discussion, if the leader isn't and the discussers aren't trained, it's torture, utter torture, with everyone just talking about anything they feel like talking. Well, I don't agree with him. Well, I don't agree with him, and everyone is just going on. So, for all the purposes that we've mentioned, to deepen, just like we had we started discussing some of the one type of a discussion that was very much centered on the teacher, discussing how what we learned about storytelling just from the little practice. So it's, discussion is also useful after an activity to extract some philosophical or intellectual points out of the activity. So we did one type of a discussion that is a typical one that's used in the classroom that is not actually a discussion where the students are talking and directing their questions and comments to each other, rather than everything is directed to the teacher. So that is one type of a discussion, but that's not exactly the kind of discussion that we're going to be practicing leading. We're going to be practicing leading the type of discussion where the teacher will take a less dominant role. He is not going to control the discussion. And when all the questions and comments are directed at the teacher, everything is completely in the teacher's control. And that means that there's less control, less input by the students. The kind of discussion that we're going to be practicing is a very important type where one of the goals is to have the students all address each other with their questions and comments, and the teacher has to relinquish control and subtly direct it without controlling it. So these are some of the uses of discussion. Because practically speaking, it is the age of democracy, most or many people aren't satisfied with decisions unless there is some discussion. Even in our temples, or even especially in our temples. So nowadays, in almost every temple in every part of the world, there is some type. In the old days, it used to be one temple president, and the law would simply descend from above, and everyone would do it, what he said. But nowadays, the tendency is much more towards some type of a council, or board of Brahmins or something, where issues are discussed and conclusions are reached and then acted on. So even for our own social needs within ISKCON, this learning how to participate and lead a discussion, practically speaking, is essential in this day and age. Now, the role of the teacher in leading a discussion is very different from the role of the teacher giving a lecture. And the difference is simple, he becomes much less prominent. And it is not just the information is coming from him, rather all the other participants in the discussion are sources of information, and different points of view are sought after. Now, one of the key qualities that a teacher has to have when leading a discussion, or not only a teacher when leading a discussion, but any discussion leader, is that somehow or another, he can't think that he knows everything. And he has to learn the fine art of listening to others and trying to hear what they have to say. One, in other words, has to become sincerely interested in what other people have to say. This takes some maturity. But one, to lead a discussion properly, one has to become in this state of mind, practically speaking, or actually speaking. So the teacher, to do this, he temporarily relinquishes his position as the center of everything, and practically speaking, he pushes the center towards the others, the other discussion members of the discussion, through the process of desiring to hear what they have to say. He has to be able to do this. He has to want to hear and value and respect the words and opinions of others. If one cannot do this, he will have a difficult time leading a discussion. He will undoubtedly and always try to just either grossly or subtly push his own viewpoint and point of view forward. And then if he's going to do that, everyone will gradually get the understanding that there is no need of discussion. He knows everything. And the discussion will fail. I even saw, one time I was walking with Prabhupada. It was right after a morning program in Asakawa Cho. I think it was that same time that we went to Kobe. And it was raining. And I remember walking behind Prabhupada as we walked from the temple room to his little house, the cottage in which he was staying. And I had asked him before, I was staying in Hong Kong then, and there was one devotee who wanted to go to the Philippines to open up a temple. Did you join in the Philippines or not? Or Toronto in Canada? So he wanted to go, this was in 1972 or so, he wanted to go to the Philippines to open up a temple. And he was ready to go alone, and I didn't think it was a good idea for him to go alone. So he was staying in Hong Kong while I was with Prabhupada in Japan. And I asked Prabhupada on several occasions if there is anyone who could go with this devotee. So when I was walking behind Prabhupada in the rain, and there were, I still remember, there were the overhanging eaves of the house, and we were walking outside and thus avoiding the rain, and the rain was falling on the side of us. Prabhupada said that Trivikram Swami can go. And I knew both devotees, and I didn't think that was a good idea. So I said, no, Prabhupada, I don't think that's a good idea. Now, there I was, little fellow, not knowing anything, and Prabhupada had made a suggestion, and normally we'd think, oh, when speaking to Prabhupada, everything that he said, you would just say, yes, Prabhupada, yes, Srila Prabhupada. But actually, Prabhupada didn't want that for his own reasons. So anyway, I said, no, Prabhupada, I don't think that's a good idea. So Prabhupada's answer was, he didn't say, you fool, how could you say, no, that's not a good idea. Who do you think you are? I am Guru, I have done. No, his mood wasn't like that at all. When I said, no, I don't think it's a good idea, he said, why? And I said, well, I think both these devotees are very strong-minded and they'd have a difficult time deciding who would surrender to who. They were both sannyasis. And Prabhupada's answer was, it doesn't make a difference who surrenders to who. And then that was the end. And he never brought it up again. Even though he didn't think that was a suitable reason for this person not going with this person, yet he accepted that they would have a difficult time who was going to surrender to who, and they would clash. But he gave the actual conclusion that it doesn't make a difference who surrenders to who. It's a matter of just getting the work done and people accepting some position or another position and being Krishna conscious. But he didn't argue about it anymore. And later on, he found another person to go, and he asked me if this person was okay, like that. So even in that simple incident with Prabhupada, I could understand that he was interested in hearing the opinions of even insignificant disciples and hearing their points of view and their reasons for thinking and doing what they're doing. So let's begin now, and I think we'll have some time for practice of discussion. We'll do it today and tomorrow. Everyone will hopefully get some time to still make more presentations, still maybe tell a story or two, and still and lead a discussion and do some of the other activities that we'll be having as well. I would like to speak now about, unless there are some questions, I'd like to speak now about some basic elements of discussion. But first, some questions. Where is it? Thank you. Okay, are there any questions about discussion and its use? Yes, Prabhu, Rajesh Prabhu. It is concerned with discussion or not concerned with? Okay, if you tell me what it's concerned with, we'll see if it's a good time now.
You told us about Prabhupada so much. So I wanted to know that how many months did you spend with Prabhupada?
Not a lot of time at one time. I don't know how many times, but maybe 10, 15 times. I got to see Prabhupada. But many of the times I saw him were in very distant, far off places like Hong Kong, like the Philippines, like Japan, and there were practically speaking, no other devotees around. And also Prabhupada, he was very merciful to me because myself and my wife went to Hong Kong and stayed there all alone just on his order for so many years. And he always, he blessed us very much because of that. So he always gave us some special consideration, and he would you know, if I wanted to see him, he would always allow me to see him. Not so much. Not enough by any means. One time he asked me to go traveling with him, and I said no. So how foolish I was. You know why I said no? Do you know why I said no? I bet everyone knows why I said no, because I was in Maya. Why else would you say no if Prabhupada asked you to travel with him? Just the illusory energy. That wasn't fair to ask that. Now I have to go back to the art of teaching here. Okay. Now discussion. Now, just like every lesson has, we're mentioning every lesson should have an objective. Discussion should also have objectives. Not just to sit and talk and talk and talk and talk and talk. They should have objectives. They should also have time limits. Generally speaking, for a discussion in a big group, 10 minutes is almost all you can get out where everyone is paying attention. Or 15 minutes. Even in the GBC meetings we see this, that if the discussions go for a long period of time, in the beginning you see that everyone is concentrating, and then after 10 or 15 minutes, only those people who are really concerned about this particular issue will have their minds on it. So you cannot discuss things for a very, very long time, unless it's Krishna Katha, then everyone, of course, can be enlivened for hours and hours and hours and hours. But practically speaking, discussions should not last more than 10 or 15 minutes. Otherwise, what happens is the same points get repeated again and again, and they turn more into arguments, etc. When a teacher is leading a discussion, he should carefully watch his students and to see how much they are paying attention. We'll speak. I mentioned this point about being able to see how much people are paying attention. If they're sleeping, it's obvious. Or if their eyes are wide open and rapt attention, then it's also obvious they're leaning forward. But when we discuss in the last of the topics that we'll be discussing, the listening, we'll discuss about some of how to recognize by the movements of someone's body language, it's called, how much one is paying attention. We'll discuss that at the end. But you have to watch people. It's not hard to understand if you just look at people and use eye contact and just scan the room. You can see how much people are interested in what you're saying and what is being said. So that's one important way to judge how long a discussion should be. Just like a discussion, just like every lesson, a discussion should have a set. Now, what do we mean by set? Dave?
A set is a subject. You choose a specific subject that you want the student to understand.
Yeah, well, we're calling the set more, the subject more the topic. Okay, now what's the set, Hasma?
An opening whereby you get the interest of the class.
Yeah, you have to get everyone involved. Now, just as in the story, when you tell a story, you have to introduce tension or conflict right in the beginning. As soon as you introduce tension and conflict, everyone will immediately begin wondering. Krishna uses this technique in the Bhagavad Gita right from the very beginning. There's a war, a battle. Will Arjuna fight? Will he not fight? So similarly, in a discussion, you have to bring in opposing sides. And if best, if there can be some emotion involved. But by telling both sides, presenting one side and then presenting the other side, what does that do to people? They tend to take one and say, which one do I believe? Well, I believe this side or I believe this side. And it gets them emotionally involved. And then, after presenting both sides, or two opposing sides where there's some tension or conflict that people care about, it has to be something that your audience cares about. After that, then you ask, well, something very simple, a lead-in question that cannot be answered by yes or no. A simple answer of yes or no. This yes or no questions are called binary questions because it can either go one of two ways, yes or no. Just like if we were going to have a discussion now about whether it's or two opposing sides where there's some tension or conflict that people care about. It has to be something that your audience cares about. After that, then you ask, well, something very simple, a lead-in question that cannot be answered by yes or no. A simple answer of yes or no. This yes or no questions are called binary questions because it can either go one of two ways, yes or no. Just like if we were going to have a discussion now about whether all speakers of the Bhagavatam. That one had. When I started off talking about that, I was thinking the use of the techniques. But then I decided if I make it a little more radical, then the tension might be around. So bringing up the point that all those who give Bhagavatam class should have some training on these techniques. So if I brought that up and I could speak on one side, yes, otherwise, otherwise people fall asleep, it's not interesting. And on the other side, Prabhupada never introduced the system, we shouldn't introduce something new like that. And I could ask, as my lead-in question, do you think it's good that everyone learns these techniques? Now that is a binary question, and it could be answered with yes or no. And then you're stuck again. Because discussion, you're ultimately trying to get everyone to talk to each other. And if you ask that kind of a binary question, it doesn't get you anywhere because someone says, yes, I do think everyone should learn it. So after you set the groundwork with your set, create the tension, then you ask a question. And that question should be one that has people more express their opinion. You don't ask questions, what is the right, correct way to do it? Should we do it or not? Because then, if people are think that they have to give absolutely correct answers, then they'll tend to not want to speak. Because maybe they're wrong, and maybe someone will say, that's completely wrong. So we ask simple questions. Well, what do you think about that? What's your opinion about this? And that's a simple way to open up a discussion. In a class, and I've seen this many, many times, that is not used to each other and relaxed with each other, or not used to discussions. Very often, you ask a question, like, what's your opinion about this? And no one will answer. And you can't start any discussion without someone, the first person, answering, at least. So there's a simple, very easy technique to use. I wrote about it but it's so simple and so effective, I'll describe it a little more. Basically, you set the stage, you say, you set your set, well, some people have the opinion, I'm sick of being in boring Bhagavatam classes. I want to learn, I want Bhagavatam to be a class. And just like everywhere else, whenever you have a class, you have teachers, and teachers need training. So what's the harm in having the Bhagavatam class teachers be trained? What is the difficulty? Why can't they learn to effectively present the information? It doesn't hurt the information. But others may say, on the other side, that Prabhupada didn't introduce it, and Prabhupada said about book distribution, not to teach them any other technique about sincerity, other than sincerity. So sincerity is the most important thing. Otherwise, the Bhagavatam class will become like a theater, and we don't want it to become a theater. We want it to be a place where information is directly presented as Krishna presented. We don't want to add anything that Prabhupada and the disciplic succession didn't add. And then I would ask, for instance, well, so there are two different sides on this question, or maybe there's other sides. I'd like to hear some of your opinions, what you think about it. Should we or should we not have the teachers, those who teach Bhagavatam class, take some teacher training? Okay, that would be my opening. Now, how many of you feel like you could respond, would have something to say on that right now? Raise your hands. Okay. Just for this demonstration, I will show you what to do if, after saying something like that, well, what's your opinions about that? And then you just see some blank faces looking at you and everyone sort of looking at each other and to see who's going to be the first one to speak. Now, we've already been working as a class together for 7 days, and we've had some interesting experiences and laughing together and everything, and people have made wrong answers and right answers, and no one's been really criticized for making wrong answers. So there's no fear, right? But often that is not the case. So what the teacher does is wait. He asks that question, well, what's your opinion about that? And he waits. And this waiting or silence is heavy. We talked about the power of silence before, and it really becomes heavy. And it starts naturally, without any effort on the teacher's part, putting incredible pressure on the students to raise their hand. So you just wait. And you look around the room. We've already learned how to look around the room. So you wait, and you look around the room with full confidence. Oh, I'm just waiting. You don't say anything. You just look around the room. And you count. And we recommended you count to 10 with one Hare Krishna, two Hare Krishna, because that's approximately a second. And you look very casual and know for sure that someone is going to raise their hand and volunteer an answer. I've never been in a situation where I've been in situations where I had to wait, but I've never been in a situation that no one raised their hand if I waited 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 or 7 seconds. You look around the room, be fully confident that someone will raise their hand, because it's hard to show it now because we're all friends and all relaxed, and we're in the middle of not exactly a demonstration but a talk about it. But there is incredible pressure that goes on everyone. I've used this technique already with you all many, many, many times, but not in discussion. When I ask a question and I'll wait for the answer, I don't immediately call on the first person. You just wait at least 3 seconds. We'll explain why probably tomorrow or the next day. But you wait. And a very funny thing is recommended to do. If after 10 seconds, and I've never had it go past 7, no one answers, you sort of get up from your seat or something. I think this one is so heavy. And you sort of lean and put yourself in a comfortable position, which tells everyone,
I'm ready to wait for 2 or 3 weeks. I don't mind. It's up to you. How long are we gonna wait? It's just so funny. But anyway, all these things, they work. So you wait, and then someone raises their hand. Tentatively, someone will raise their hand. And then you call on them. And no matter what they say, you cannot criticize their answer. Even if they say something completely off the wall, like, you know, that, you know, instead of having teacher training in the Bhagavatam class, why don't we have prasadam? That will get everyone really interested. And then you have to answer, you have to respond in a positive, non-critical way. You say, even if it's, I learned this from one of my godbrothers who's an expert at non-committal answers. One is, that's an interesting thought, which doesn't tell anyone anything about your opinion about it. And still, it's encouraging. Now, what is the reason why you can't answer in a negative or critical way? Now, I'm going to wait here, and you'll note more people will raise their hand if you wait. Okay, let's see if I can find someone who doesn't. Yes, Prabhu.
It might cause an effect.
Well, what would be the effect? Okay, good. But what will be the effect, the negative effect? And what we, okay, let's just try this. Okay, this is a role playing, right? Now, I'm starting a discussion on this Bhagavatam class, whether it's good. Now, you're all students in the class, I'm the teacher, and now I'm going to say whether we should have mandatory teaching or not for the Bhagavatam speakers. Okay, what's your opinion about that? Should we or shouldn't we? Okay, Sundarananda?
You gave the reason that Srila Prabhupada never introduced that.
Yeah, but yes, but Prabhupada also said that we should be practical, so I think you should be practical about your application of this. Okay, cut. I don't know if you all were in role, but cut. You're not in role now. But how did you feel, anyone who was thinking of making an answer there?
Feel like you're taking the position that you know everything, you're already cutting off from this idea.
But how did you feel about making your response, Pundari?
I didn't want to make my response.
Who else? Did you feel a little scared? Or put off? Uh-oh. Yeah?
I thought I was
going to
respond, but that was going to be on your side.
That's the kind of men we want around here. So the teacher's business is to, he's bringing out. So especially that first answer, but in general, as we are just seeing, that a teacher has to be very careful about how he responds to comments, because it takes some bravery to speak something you're not sure about exactly in front of a class. It takes some bravery to do that, and if the teacher cuts, then the students think naturally, you know, why should I be so foolish to get my head chopped off? I'll just keep my head down.
You're saying that mainly it should be done from the audience, or
these are just general principles. Anytime a discussion leader is leading a discussion, when we're doing this type of a discussion where everyone is looking towards me, it's not a real type of discussion. Everything is filtered through me. Everyone's comments are filtered through me. No one's directing their comments towards each other. We're going to be actually practicing that second type, which is more of a discussion, an exchange of ideas. But all these different techniques are useful in all kinds of discussions. Okay, so if the teacher handles it right and is gentle with the first few people who speak and always say, that's good, always say yes. You always say yes, good answer. Anyone else?
Yes,
And then if he gets off lightly, that's really interesting. That was a really interesting answer. Then everyone naturally starts thinking, hey, I have something interesting too. I could say something. Very practical. And we'll have more, we'll discuss this probably tomorrow, called positive reinforcement. Very essential business. Okay, so after, did you want to say something? Sure. After the discussion is opened and people start discussing some, then there's some things that the teacher does to lead the discussion, to, depending upon what the purpose of the discussion is. And then finally he has to close it. So when it's better to close the discussion when everyone is still excited about it, rather than wait till no one cares about it anymore and the energy's all gone. So it's good, you give a little notice, okay, we'll have a couple of more comments on it, and then we'll end. If anyone hasn't spoken yet, we'll give them a chance to speak first. You always give some warning first before you're going to end the discussion, so people prepare their minds, and then you can ask for some summaries of it. Does anyone want to summarize what conclusions we reached? Things like this. These are all simple summarizing techniques or ending techniques. Okay, yes, questions? Okay, it depends. Remember, we were talking basically about opening up the discussion. And if the teacher isn't positive or the discussion leader isn't positive right in the beginning, there won't be any discussion to work on. That was the main point. And once the once things are going, then depending upon what a discussion, kind of a discussion it is, then the teacher uses different techniques to lead it. The teacher has a definite role to play in leading the discussion. But still, generally speaking, we should try to be as positive as possible, generally speaking. And then, it's just like in a class, the general rule in a classroom with Gurukula children or adults is you speak softly and you don't yell. There's something that I coined the phrase the theory of escalation, that if I'm speaking softly, then sometimes if I say, okay, I want everyone's attention, then that escalation of intensity is very powerful. And that can easily get everyone's attention. But if I'm always yelling, what do I do to escalate when I really want people to pay attention? Then I have to smack Mahahari a couple of times, say, okay, everyone better be good, or something like that. And then if I'm always hitting the children all the time, what do I have to do when I really want to get attention? You know, I have to cut off an arm or two. Okay, kids. And then if you're always cutting off arms, what do you have to throw a few out the windows? Okay, kids, I told you to be quiet or else I'll throw you out the window like I threw him out the window. So the general rule in all kinds of teaching is you act positively and gently in all kinds of dealings even. And then when you especially want to make a point or say no, then that no in the midst of the positive, all the positive is very, very powerful. But if you're always saying no all the time, then you have to escalate higher.
Yeah.
Oh, there is no question of not eliciting a response.
This is a rare hypothetical.
Yeah.
Would you make a response? Or
you can try again from a different angle, because maybe you presented something. Okay, now today we're going to discuss which is the best cricket team in the world. Now, of course, if there are any Aussies here or Englishmen, maybe it might fire everyone up. But usually that's not going to elicit very much excitement from a group of devotees. So in that case, you might not have prepared properly. You haven't set the ground right, or you've chosen the wrong topic, something like that.
But if you follow these techniques and it's a good choice of topic and you've analyzed, gotten a little tension in it, there's really no question of not getting a discussion going.
Yeah. What about when you're getting a discussion, say in the Bhagavad Gita class, and you're discussing one verse, of course, you've already covered the material, now you're going back and carrying on discussion with students, there's a few deviants in that class who like to say, I want to be a teacher, you know, they'll just try to keep the whole class astray. Then,
oh, there's so many techniques for that. You want to, Arjuna, you want to volunteer any? You're talking about Bhagavad Gita, and some kid says, I want to be a peacock. Okay, kid, you can go outside. Go outside and be a peacock. We'll continue the discussion. Out the window. Right? Oh, you say, that's an interesting point. Why don't we talk about that later? Right now, we're talking about Bhagavad Gita. We'll get to that point later. Yeah, in about 3 years.
The first response you got was, you know, it was off, we should have to shout about different classes. They always encourage you, especially children, to make other funny remarks.
No, not necessarily, because anyone else have any other ideas? Or even you could say something a little negative in a positive way. Why don't we keep the discussion, you know, does anyone have any ideas more exactly on whether we should or shouldn't train teachers in the Bhagavatam class? That's called focusing. A discussion leader often has to focus. That's one of his main jobs, to focus discussion. Okay, I wanted to have some practice now, but we're not going to be able to. For homework, I want you to, everyone individually, to pick a discussion topic and formulate your opening for it, and then we'll have, everyone will get a chance tomorrow, hopefully, to lead a discussion. We'll break into small groups. We've done in this in our teacher training courses over the years. I've had some really interesting discussions going on. One student brought up reinitiation as a topic like that a few years ago, and some of the devotees, you know, it was just a practice, you know, and everyone was. Some of the devotees were very, very, they got very upset, and others were feeling very strongly on the other side. It was really wild. Another time, I led a discussion, I can't remember where it was, somewhere in the United States, on should women give Bhagavatam classes? And then it got so hot, and then it almost caused, I left, you know, after a few days after my teacher training course was over, and there was almost a revolution in the temple. Because I was being positive and encouraging and everything. Anyway, so discussions are, there's dynamite in discussions if you have the right topics. Jaya Doitamaraj did that first year in the debate course, right? It got hot. But that was more debate and argument. Discussion is a different mood. Because in discussion, and this is why so many discussions fail, is that one has to be in the mood, not the teacher, but the teacher has to set the example of it. But not only the teacher, but the students have to be in the mood of, I want to hear what other people say. Unfortunately, in most discussions, everyone is in the mood is, I want to hear what people say so I can find out when they finish so I can speak, because I know the answer. And that, Krishna will not manifest the conclusion if everyone's in that mood. But if people are sincerely trying to explain things from their point, what they understand, but trying to hear what others say, then in that association of devotees, Krishna often brings amazing inspiration.
Yeah. Those groups should discuss with the goal of coming to a conclusion within that group, so that
Well, it depends what the objective is. See, there's a system for coming to conclusions. but it's not easy to do, and we'll be going too short a time for that. But just discuss something, a topic, both sides of a topic, a question that's interesting, and maybe you will get a consensus or an agreement on it, and then do that.
That's not the point of the
argument. No, we just want to do some practice of leading discussions. We may do one of those later on, but it's hard to find practical things that need practical solutions, you know, that are concerned a group of devotees who are just coming from all over the world, and etc. Okay, why don't we take 5 minutes and do some writing on this class? I'll warn you at 4 minutes. Keep the pens moving. Write down inspirations you're getting or things that you learned about teaching, teacher training, the whole Vrindavan experience, what have you. 5 minutes, it's already 20 seconds. There's no other reading homework, just make sure that you've read up to page 79.
What page?
79, you were supposed to have read up. Is that right?
59 or 79?
79, I think. Huh? Right? So if you haven't read up to page 79, read up to page 79. Remember, the test is Friday.